This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And boy, oh boy, do I have a story behind, well, a story, because this is an, you know, sometimes books come along just at the right time. It's very timely because it is about an area of the world that most Americans were not thinking about. But now it's on their radar. So I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, William Maz. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right.
Yes, it's fine. It's Maz.
Is it Maz?
Yeah.
Okay. William Maz. Do I call you William or Bill? What do you like?
You can call me Bill. Thank you.
Okay, Bill. Well, the Bucharest dossier is, well, it comes out, I think, at the right time where people, you know, are finally sort of focused on that area of the world that many people didn't even, most Americans who, you know, haven't traveled and haven't been over there don't know all these little countries as they think of them, unless they have relatives from there. So this, I think, is a very timely book.
Well, thank you. I certainly didn't time it that way, because when I wrote it, none of this was happening a couple of years ago. So it's just one of those coincidences in life. But I wanted to write the book because I wanted to show something about totalitarianism and what life is like inside that kind of society. There are still totalitarian societies in this world, including Russia right now, which has become not very different from Ceausescu's Romania in the 1980s. And so I think we need to recognize things for what they are, including some of the movements in America today. So I think
Definitely. I mean, sort of your book ends at the time where we think the Cold War is over. It's over. We don't have to worry about anything over there anymore. That we've had a rude awakening that, yes, all of these things that have been bubbling up over the years, it's something we have to pay attention to. And, of course, in Romania, you had there a dictator of, I mean, wow, Ceausescu was something. And so your book, which, you know, is about that period, is fascinating.
Thank you. I mean, let me give you a little background. In December of 1989, when the book takes place, Romania was the only country left that hadn't changed from communism to some form of democracy. The Soviet Union was falling apart, and Romania was the sole country Soviet satellite left. And the reason is that its leader, a Stalinist named Nicolae Ceausescu, had a tight grip on the society. His main method was using the Securitate, which was the secret police. And it was a society in which you didn't know who was an informant. They think that anywhere from 1 out of 4 to 1 out of 20 people in the whole society was either a paid Securitate officer or an informant. So you couldn't say anything without being arrested. As a result, there was never a resistance movement. There were never any heroes like Vaclav Havel or Lech Walesa in Romania, because the minute that someone like that sprang up, he was put either into a jail or into one of the many psychiatric wards that they had for political prisoners. So it was a society in which every telephone from the factory came with a microphone inside of it, which could hear not only what you said on the phone, but what you said in the room. So it wasn't unusual when you go to someone's house to see a wire, telephone wire, going from the wall into a closet or a drawer so that the microphone could be muffled. That's the type of society it was. And people were starving, which we can go into.
Well, definitely. Let's talk about what communism did to that country, which is really a beautiful country, has wonderful resources, and the people are fantastic. I have some relatives who are Romanian. Generous, wonderful, kind people. And so you wonder how, as you said, they can become informants, how they can spy on each other. It's just, it's mind-boggling. And that's what I found so fascinating about reading your book, how you write about it. Of course, you were born in Romania and been back there many times. So tell us how this all came about, the idea for the story. This is your first book. This is really amazing for a first book.
Well, thank you very much. But it's my fourth novel that I've written, the first one that got picked up. I've been writing since I was in high school. Even during my medical practice in medical school, I was writing. And so I don't consider myself a novice just because this book got published now in later years. But this period of history, I think, is important just to know how communism changed, how certain democracies came about. And the fact that Romania, we should remember, was the only country that left communism that had a violent revolution, anywhere from 1,200 to, you know, some people call it all the way up to 10,000 people died, and nobody knows, because during the revolution, the government would come in the middle of the night and take up all the corpses to burn them, and there were no records, and so nobody knows how many people died in that revolution, but it was the only country that did not have a velvet revolution, is what, you know, we think of them like. And the reason is, again, unknown. This is one of the mysteries that I try to solve in the book. Was this a real revolution? I mean, people to this day keep asking this. Was it a real revolution or was it a coup? And if it was a coup, what outside forces were involved? And so, first of all, I structured the book in three layers. It is a love story inside of a spy novel inside of a historical novel. And all of those three layers have mystery to them. It is a mystery thriller, after all, though. So I try to use the vehicle of a thriller novel to do many things, to ask questions. One of them is to show the society as it was. Another one is to talk about what the immigrant feels like when he leaves his own country. Another one is to try to analyze what these people felt like and what corruption does to the people who live there. You have to remember that everything in Romania and under any communist regime was based on a bribe. It used to be called the bakshish in Romania, from the Turkish word. You couldn't do anything without a bribe. From going to the doctor, you had to bribe him with eggs or a chicken or a slab of beef. If you had to do surgery, you had to give him your grandmother's jewelry. Otherwise, he wouldn't see you. To getting a car, you would have to sign up for a car. It would be a five-year wait before you got it, unless you bribed the manager, who would then put you higher on the list, depending on the amount of the bribe, and so forth. Everything was corrupt. And so whether you were the recipient of a bribe or the giver of the bribe, you were corrupted. And everybody felt guilty. There was a doom, a depression across the country. And the propaganda kept coming. And so nobody could really know what was going on outside in the Western world, except for some few who listened to the BBC or Radio Free Europe or the Voice of America, which was, by the way, illegal to listen to. So if somebody heard you doing that, you would be reported. And then you would be brought in for interrogation. So that was the world. And the other thing is, Ceausescu was in debt to the West. During the 80s, he decided to pay back the debt. And so the only thing that Romania had to sell was grain and natural minerals. As a result, he sold most of the grain, leaving only some of it for the city. And even there, people were standing in line every day for basic food. On any day, you walk down the street and you see lines of people outside grocery stores, and you would ask them, what are you waiting for? And some would say, well, but there's a rumor, just a rumor that a truck is coming in with eggs today. Another guy said, well, we're waiting for size 42 pants. That scene is in my book. And I said, well, not everybody here wears size 42 pants. And he says, you don't understand. We buy whatever they sell. Sometimes we don't even know what they sell. We buy it anyway. And then we trade it among ourselves. He says, this is an example of reverse evolution. We went back to the barter system. And that's how people survived. And so it was an abysmal time where people left work in order to stand in line. So the factories didn't produce much. You know, all of work stopped in order for people to scrounge around for food every day.
Well, you know, let's talk about your main character, because you have a main character here who you've, as you said, there's a lovely romance built into this book with the historical aspects, but I think that the romance is what's so compelling as you're reading the book. It's a really lovely story. So tell us about how you came up with the idea for the main character. I found him fascinating, and somebody that you know, I think people will be interested in reading about.
Well, the main character has, you know, something to do with my own, obviously my own history. One of the things that beginning writers have a problem with is using kernels of their own history in order to put into a book or get ideas, because they believe they need to be loyal to the true story. As you become a better writer, you understand that you just use the kernels. You don't have to be loyal to the true story. You have to be loyal to the larger story that you're trying to tell. So my character is an immigrant from Romania who decides that he doesn't want to be part of the immigrant community in America because it is suffocating. He changes his name to become, you know, an American name, goes to Harvard, and is recruited by the CIA to become an analyst. So as an analyst, he is unique in that he has his own mole in the KGB that he is running. And part of the mystery is, who is this mole, codenamed Boris, and how did Heflin, the character, get to be his handler? You know, analysts don't have moles. Field agents would do. So as we get into the story, the story begins with the murder of his recruiter, his professor at Harvard, and a message from Boris to come to Bucharest to create history. Now, he knows that Bucharest and Romania are the last to remain communist, so he's intrigued, and he also has a childhood love that he has mythologized all these years that he's been away. Her name is Pusha, which comes from a Romanian word, Papusha, which means a little doll, because she was so pretty. So he's got many reasons for going back now. So he goes back to Bucharest, to meet Boris, his mole, and try to find Pusha. And that's how the story begins.
Well, it's very well written. You know, As I said, I always, when I get into a book and I find myself just sort of swept away with the storyline, I'm right there. And it was very, what I enjoyed, now I haven't been to Romania myself. I was in Russia during the time when I saw those lines at the, and the same thing. I was really a teenager when I went and the idea that everybody there was spying on you, and in your hotel room, you knew that they were spying on you. It was so oppressive. It was so. The reason I went to Russia, well, I was of course thinking of Tolstoy, and I was thinking of you know, all of that. And then I got there, and I found it very oppressive very quickly. And I really wanted to get out of there.
Well, it is a gray world in many ways. I mean, first of all, what they wear in those days, it's nothing like what we wore in the West. It's all grays and blacks and old. Secondly, people learn to speak differently under an oppressive society. Nobody says names or places out loud. If you're talking in public, they have developed this way of speaking like this. They say, well, how is our friend that we talked about the other night? Or what happened to that issue that we discussed the other day? Nobody says what issue, what friend, because they know what we're talking about, and nobody wants to be overheard. And so it is a society where you don't know who to trust. And so people have old friends. Friends don't change. The only people you can trust are people you've known for 20 years. The only ones you can actually talk to halfway honestly. And so you will find every time I went back, the same four or five people were there to greet me. They didn't make new friends, didn't want any new friends, because they couldn't trust to bring them into the little circle. So that's how that whole society functioned. And
I think you capture that. You capture that in the book, yeah. that feeling of oppression. It's sort of always there. And I appreciated that part of the book.
Yes, and at the same time, through this whole thing, Heflin has to solve several mysteries. One is, you know, he lives through the revolution, and he realizes that something strange is going on. What that is, he has to find out. Secondly, he has to find out what his mission is there. Who is Boris, and why did he want him to come to Bucharest? Third, he has to find out about his childhood love, Pusha, what happened to her. She stopped writing to him a year after he left while he was living in a refugee camp in Greece. And he thinks that maybe she stopped loving him. And he finds out what really happened to her, why she stopped writing to him. So that spurs him on to find her and takes him on a roller coaster. We see what happens. I mean, everybody knows what happens to Ceausescu. Eventually, the people rise up. He tries to escape via helicopter. He's caught. There's a kangaroo court. Takes less than an hour, a trial. And then he's executed together with his wife. But how did this revolution happen? And why did it happen then? And not years before, and so forth. And so I did a lot of research in the revolution. So everything about those events is real. It's what happened, at least from what I am have been reading, and I've read a lot. And also from interviews with people that I know there, And from my own personal experience, I was there a few months before the revolution and a few months after the revolution. So I was able to talk to everybody. I carry everything in the revolution up to the end, and then I try to propose my own solution as to how that revolution started.
Well, I think it's beautifully written. And as I said, because of the time now that I think many people are interested to find out more about that area in general, people who didn't know, for example, most people didn't know that Ukraine was so big. They didn't understand the importance of Ukraine, geopolitically. And of course, Romania also has played a role in all of this shuffling around. I'm going back all the way. I've been doing a book set in 1853 about Franz Joseph, and sometimes you think nothing changes. It's still this tinderbox always of what can happen in these countries.
But these are big power politics. Romania has always gone back and forth between the Russian bear and the West. Romania always wanted to be a Western country. It has a lot of French influence from architecture to the language. Some people have the first language as French if they were aristocrats. Between First and Second World War, Romania was a parliamentary democracy. It had a king, much like England structure, and it was very wealthy. It had oil. It was called the breadbasket of the East. It was a very wealthy country. A lot of people went there. Communism came when the Russians invaded after World War II.
And they just—it's like this gray blanket that they just threw over everything, and they still are trying to do it.
Well, right now it's not communism, which really tells you a lot. I have a scene in the book about between an actor and the protagonist, which actually occurred. And I brought them Johnny Walker Black whiskey at a party, which only I could get from a tourist shop, which accepted only dollars. And they got a little drunk and they started talking. And this actor tells me, "Bill," he says, "there are more communists in New York City than there are in all of Romania." Says, nobody believes in it, including the man himself, meaning Ceausescu. Communism was a ruse. It was a way of putting an ideology over, really, a totalitarian government to keep the people in power. Right now Putin doesn't espouse communism. He espouses totalitarianism. He's afraid of being thrown out. And part of the reason is that he knows he'll be hanged or shot. Same thing with Ceausescu. He knew that if he let go of power to have an election, which he never dreamed of, but anyway, he would have been hanged by the populace. And so these people can't allow themselves to let go because the people will rise up, and so they have to keep on the lid on. Now they weren't all like that. I mean, you had Gorbachev, who was a different type of person. He wasn't a Democrat of a small D, but he wanted glasnost and perestroika, which is kind of an unclenching of the fist, to have a more kinder, gentler type of socialism. But he lost control, and so the Soviet Union fell apart because of him. So the Russians don't really like him very much, and Putin hates him because he lost the Soviet Union.
Well, you've gotten really great reviews from many people, including, I noticed, Lee Child.
Yes, he really liked the book, and I'm very grateful for his comments. I got great reviews after that from NPR, and it hasn't even come out yet.
Yeah, I like on your website you have a countdown. I got a kick out of that when I went to your website, and you got 4 days, 11 hours, 28 minutes, and 57 seconds, and boy, the book is going to be released. I had to talk to you early before the release because next week is the 7th anniversary of Joy on Paper, and I was fully booked, but I really wanted, you know, I of course got the book well in advance, and the minute I read it, I was just so taken with it. The great writing, the fact that you did create the atmosphere, it was partly the atmosphere that I remembered from traveling over there and living in totalitarian countries myself. So I appreciated how you were able to have that tension, I think, that you build in with the storyline. So I think it's a wonderful book. I'm sure that it's going to do very, very well, and I'm looking forward to more books from you.
Well, I certainly intend to write some more, but thank you so much for your kind words.
Okay, so tell people your website and other social media you have.
It's williammaz.com. That's M-A-Z, williammaz, one word, .com. And I'm on William Maz on Facebook, Instagram.
And all of those things.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's M-A-Z. I like that. You know, I'm Z. My name is Patsy with a Z. So I'm always partial to people who have Z in their name because I like that.
Well, it's a pen name.
Yeah, I know. Well, because I think your real name is probably too long.
Too long.
Yeah, you have to. But it's catchy, you know? It's something, when people see it, they'll remember it. And they'll remember that you got a wonderful, wonderful review from Lee Child, who's been on Joy on Paper many times. And I always appreciate, I know when he gives a, you know, he's one of these writers who really reads the book before he gives a blurb. He wants to make sure that it's really exactly the right blurb. So when he says something nice, you know it's really great. So I was really impressed with that.
Well, that's wonderful. Nice to know that. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, you always have to let me know when you have a new book coming out, and we'll have you back on Joy on Paper because I think you're a fantastic writer.
It was a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now. Bye. All right. Whoa, this is, you know, my goodness, who would have known all of this craziness? Let's play the book buzz, and then we'll go to commercials, and then I'm back with Rhonda Green. Oh, boy, this is going to be fun.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2021 release in print and ebook, Vigil, Inferno Season, Book 2 in the Cybernight Saga by Bard Constantine. Readers who start with Vigil, Book 1, will discover how the Cataclysm caused the end of the world as Hellraiser soldier Jet Wolf knew it and follow his transformation into high-tech hero Vigil. Now that you've had your briefing, let's download the book buzz. In a sinister dystopian future that blends the noir, superhero, and cyberpunk genres, a man out of time fights behind a mask in the crime-ridden streets of New York, where corrupt and brutal villains, robots with electro-lasers, and synthoid clones roam. 300 years after Jet Wolf fell into cryosleep, he awakens and stumbles into a society split in two. Haven Corps is a closed-off dome for the elites, and all others scrape a living on the outside, where crime lords and gangs rule largely unchecked. When we pick up in Book 2, Vigil pairs up with Spitfire, a street-smart teenager who joins his growing team to battle Diabolus, a trifecta of crime syndicates dealing in stolen memories, the latest drug craze at the Hayes Parlors. The trail leads Vigil and his team deep into the underbelly, an abyss beneath the city where nothing is as it seems. This masterful neo-pulp mashup with jaw-dropping twists would be one binge-worthy television series if the right producer picks it up. My casting choice for Vigil would be between Henry Simmons, aka Mac from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., or Mike Coulter, who played Luke Cage in the Netflix series and currently stars in CBS's Evil. Bard Constantine is a pen name for Alabama author Lewis Knight, a self-described neo-pulp author who writes genre-blended, action-oriented pulp fiction with a kick. People come for the action and stay for the appealing characters. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest. Oh, I'm not. Well, I don't know where she is. Oh, well, we're just waiting for her. Rhonda Green is supposed to be calling in. I hope she's going to make it. Well, we will talk about her book for a minute anyway, because I wanted to say something really great about her. I'm hoping that she'll call in, because I know that she was traveling, so we'll see. What I particularly wanted to say and thank her so much is that in the dedication, she actually mentions my name. So she says, "Thank you, Patsy Gill from Joy on Paper radio show in Clearwater, Florida." And she writes, "You have encouraged me to continue writing my stories and to reach for higher goals. I thank you for believing in me and my abilities. I have only known you a short time, yet you have changed the trajectory of my future." Well, that was so nice of her to write, because she is one of the people who I consider really the success of Joy on Paper, is that I have, you know, over the 7 years, I've spoken to so many authors. Of course, I love talking to all the global best-selling authors. I love talking to all the, I think I've spoken to almost 300 New York Times best-selling authors. But what I really get a kick out of is discovering an author who is just starting off, who is just writing her first book, or his first book. And thankfully, in many ways, you know, when this pandemic hit, people who had something to do, something to think about other than just the pandemic, they were really given this opportunity to sort of sit down and write. Because when you've had this idea in your head for a long time, you've thought about writing, you've wanted to write, and you just didn't have the time. Well, the pandemic sort of gave you this time there for 6 or 7 months where we really didn't know what was going on. And people sat down and started writing. And I am so happy with those people who have contacted me and said, yes, it did change my life. some of them have finished their books. And in this case, for example, Rhonda Green finished her books. Going to be a series of books called Sunrises and Sunsets. And this first book, this second book is called Spectacular Sunrises and Sunsets. Her books aren't very long. They're like 90 pages, 95 pages. She's self-publishing them herself. She's writing them herself. She's not working with a committee of people. She's really putting her words down and speaking in a very authentic voice. What I've discovered, and this is so important for all of you out there, when you are taking courses in college and writing courses and trying to get an MFA degree, master's in fine arts or whatever, you're trying to get this degree in writing. But in the end, you have to be writing from your heart. You can't take and do something that's a formula because it shows. If you actually write from your heart and you have your own voice, it's thrilling. It's really quite thrilling. When I got her first book and I read it, she had sent it to me. I'm still not sure exactly how she found out about me. She listened to the radio, but somehow she managed to find me. I got the book at home and I was really surprised. I think a friend of a friend must have told her. And I opened the book, and as I said, it's a small book, 90 pages. And I sat down and I started reading it, and I was just going to sort of glance through it. And then I found myself, I couldn't put it down because her story was so heartfelt, so rich in detail. Not everything isn't perfect. Every sentence isn't perfect, but the entire book as a whole is perfect because it is a story from her heart. And this is what is so miraculous about authors. When you get this point where you just want to tell your story and you want to share it. And so, as a matter of fact, for Rhonda, this is something I think, as she said, it has changed her life. It has given her the courage and the encouragement that Joy on Paper and my listeners who went out and bought the book. I have a very nice web page for her. Because she didn't have a web page herself, I put on my Joy on Paper website, I have a page for Rhonda. You can go there and see her art. I wanted to put her art up. She's also a very fine artist, and I wanted to put it up there, and you can check out her art and buy her books. And that's what I'm trying here to do on Joy on Paper, to do more than just talk one time to an author. I want them to come back. I want them to sort of continue with this story so we can understand how they've succeeded over the years. For example, Carol J. Perry started, she was my first in-studio guest. And it has been so thrilling over the years to see how she's written her first series, which is called Witch City Mysteries, and we're now up to book 12, which is coming out in April, on April 26th, and she'll be here to talk about it. But to see the development over the years, and then at one point she decided she could throw in another series, a completely different series, and this one is based here in Florida, which I love because I know the locations, and it's called Haunted Haven Mystery Series. And again, she just went with it. She writes beautifully. She's just a great writer. And this is what I'd love to hear, these success stories of how you start off with one book and you just grow and grow and grow. And it's magical in so many ways. And Carol did it in 7 years. And so can you. You have to, if you have a story in your head, it's there. You know, I was very happy, for example, today, when I'm talking to William Mays, Maz. I think it's pronounced Maz. M-A-Z. Maz. I would pronounce it Maz because I think it's much longer. So William Maz, M-A-Z, and the Bucharest Dossier. What is nice about it is, of course, he's written some other books before, but once he gets this book published and it's out there, and it's very exciting. It's very exciting to see that happen for an author. So I want just to thank Rhonda. I don't know why she didn't call in today. She was supposed to call in, but she could be traveling. I know she was going on a trip, and these things happen. But I want to, again, thank her. I want to thank all of the people who have been sending me in the story of how they have started writing, including... The five of you who wrote your books during November, National Novel Writing Month, there are five of you who have been sort of in contact with me, telling me of your progress. It's now March, and so I know three of you have taken this time between November through the holidays, and you've been editing your books. You wrote 50,000 words in November, and that's a great accomplishment. My goddaughter's done it several times, Kenesha, and she's written an entire novel in 1 month. And then she goes back and she's editing things as, you know, she's, of course, working and she's had a baby. But she's still, it's always there in the back of her mind working on, you know, she's going to improve things, get things done, and at one point be able to publish her book, just like William Maz did. And his book is coming out in 2 days. I really love that countdown that he has on his website. It's really cute. I hadn't seen that on any other author's website, this countdown to the release date. It's very nice. And when you are, you know, authors have so many things to do. It is so difficult to... When you think about all of the things that you have to do as an author, the marketing, the editing, everything, and I just admire people who can do it and who do it well. And another person who does it well is Rita Moreau, who does our book buzzes. And it's very exciting that she's going to be a guest host when I go to, I'm going to go to Texas. I'm going to Texas. At the end of the month, and Rita Moreau is going to be the guest host here on Joy on Paper on March 29th, and she's going to take over the program, and I know she's going to be so thrilled to work here with Big Ed, who will be right there behind the glasses and encouraging her, because it's going to be her first time as a guest host, and she's going to have two wonderful guests. And, you know, again, she is also an example of an author who, you know, she has two series out there, and we're going to be talking a lot about her series in the coming months, because again, she's got more releases, and both Carol J. Perry and Rita Moreau are really part of the Joy on Paper family, and you can go to their websites and see more about their books. Both of them have nice websites and a lot of information. So I'm going to play a song now, because one of the things I've also been doing, I've had such a thrill with talking to songwriters, and one of the songwriters that was on the program back in December, and he wrote a song, and I think it is such a inspiring song. I want to play the song, and then I'll come back with a few closing words about what's going to happen for the anniversary program. Kevin, yeah, we're going to have, I thought, Be My Good. He was on the program, and we had him, I think we had it logged up. I played a couple times. I really love his music, and so we'll see if we can get that. If not, I'm going to play my favorite song, which is the Thud song. You know, I have to play it. One day I'm going to, as a matter of fact, everybody's been asking me to do this. I have 10 songs on my morning playlist, and maybe I'll after the anniversary program, every program I'll play one of my songs so you can hear. And it's quite a variety. You know, when you wake up in the morning and you want to get moving, I like songs both that are inspiring and songs that are just sort of give you a kick. So I can always, if not, I can always, and Ed knows that I can always do Boxcar because I love Boxcar. So when we have something, we'll play it. If not, I will just keep. Oh, here it is. This, I love this song.
Growing in the town, sometimes I can't hardly face another day. I am assured that God will see me through. It's working for my good. It's working for my good. Sometimes the clouds hang low. I can't even see my way. I ask the question, when things will ever change for me.
Well, that is a song that will inspire you. And I want to, again, remind you, as I was talking about all of you writers out there who have been sending me messages that you've been writing and you're writing, when you're asking me questions about how to find an agent, again, I just want to remind everybody, go to Publishers Weekly and go to the book deals. They have one page there of book deals. Every week they list the book deals and it tells you what agents got what book deal, and sometimes they tell you how much, and it's always fun to read about that and to find out. Sometimes I love when they say it's a six-figure or even a seven-figure advance, and so it's just a fun thing. And as a writer, you want to be aware of what agents are actually getting book deals, because it's not easy to find an agent, but if you're going to go through that process of trying to find an agent, make sure you spend your time wisely and get an agent who's actually actively getting book deals, because those are the ones that the publishers are talking to, and those are the ones that you want to try to approach. And you can find them on Publishers Weekly. As a matter of fact, for writers, it's a wonderful magazine to get. They have a subscription, a very reasonable subscription rate, and you can get that and sort of find out what's happening in the world. Because, you know, there are going to be more events happening again. I think we're back to conventions are going to be coming back, competitions. There are lots of competitions coming back. Everybody was sort of in the past 2 years drifting around, not knowing exactly what was going to happen or who was going to go where. But it looks like it's going to be a better year this year. And so for writers, definitely I would suggest you get Publishers Weekly and find out about what's going on. Also, there are lists of contests there, and you can go to different organizations and find out about the contests that are coming up. Because one of the ways to get yourself noticed is to win a competition, a contest. You have to try everything when you're an author. Nowadays, you have to just reach out there and find all sorts of avenues to get yourself noticed, get yourself seen, and get your name recognized. And I like that. The more I think of this Maz, I like this name. I'm looking at it. M-A-Z. I like that name. William Maz. And his book is going to be out on the 15th. And so I wanted just to have him today so that we could talk about it. And again, one of the great things you can do for an author, if you really like an author, if you really care, and pre-order the book, because this really makes a publisher really notices if an author gets pre-orders. So if you have a favorite author, go ahead and always pre-order the book. Carol J. Perry's number 12 in her Witch City Mysteries is coming up, and you can pre-order that. It's called Till Death. And in this one, we're going to have a wedding, which is thrilling. My sister Natalie, who is known as the connoisseur of cozy mysteries, because she reads so many of them. Now, over the years, she has been really my sounding board. If I give her a cozy mystery and she reads it, and usually within 10 pages, she'll say to me, "That's it. This is a winner. This writer is great." And so I know that that's what happened the minute she read Carol J. Perry's first book. And so I just want you to know that you should pre-order Till Death. It's going to be a fun book. And wow, I can't believe it. It's been, I'm running out of, my throat is hurting. I've been really working so hard on getting ready for the 7th anniversary program, because it's going to be lots of fun. Tasha Alexander and Andrew Grant, or Andrew Child, I don't know what we're going to call him. Lee Child's brother, who took over the Jack Reacher book, and I know he's working on a deadline, but he's going to take some time to come here on Joy on Paper and to announce the winners of the Patsy Awards. So that's going to be lots of fun, and we've been having fun getting ready for that. Anyway, people, did I say one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book? Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. And it will, if you start writing. So start writing and say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. And he saluted me. I saluted him because, oh boy, I should have been a general. Okay, bye-bye now, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend, and read a good book. Find something that will relax you and take you out of everything. Okay, bye-bye.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3